All right. Hello, everybody. We're going to get started today. Close that. I don't need that anymore. And we're going to do coaching. So today's a little special. Number one, I just want to welcome anybody that's new to Novius. If this is your first coaching call, you're going to kind of get to see the magic of coaching. And so, everybody in the chat, make sure that if we have newbies, that you welcome them. And if they're wondering what's going on, remember, brand new people, they don't have access to everything. They only have access basically to the Novius course and a few things. So sometimes when we're like, you should do this or you should do that, they don't have that yet. So they have it after 30 days. And we do that on purpose because if you think back to when you first joined, it's very rare that I have people that come in and say, I wish you would give me way too much stuff to sort through and to figure out. Usually, what they say is, I get overwhelmed really easily. It would be better for me if you just gave me enough of what I'm supposed to focus on and nothing else. And then after about 30 days, we kind of have our feet wet. We know what we're doing. And we're ready for the wealth of information that that Nobius has. And then we also might have some people here who are not members. They have not joined yet. We invited for a sneak peek. So we may have a few people left over from what we were doing this week to get new members here who are experiencing coaching for the first time. They're not going to get coached. We're not going to coach them, but I told them they could get a good look at what it's like when you, when we do the coaching side, because whenever I do weeks where people pay to do like a small challenge with us, we don't coach them just because it's just better to do Q&A and to talk to them and do that stuff. Coaching is like one of those things where I feel like it's during the week when they're just getting introduced to things, it's better for them to have just do this, do that. What questions do you have? Let me help you with those things. All right, with all that said, I know that raise your hand if you wanted to get coached today. I had Kayla was, yes, or Carla, maybe it was Carla, and I might have read it as Kayla this morning. I'm going to bring you up first because you wanted to get coached on stopping at enough. And that is always an important topic. And for everybody who's here, this month is all about stopping at enough. I am doing every little audio that you get from me every single day is about stopping at enough. So I hope you're enjoying the Kren 365s. I work really hard on them. I just finished 16 more of them yesterday. And I'll tell you, recording 365s has been a big endeavor. I didn't realize how much work it was going to be to run my mouth that much, 365 times a year on top of everything else that I'm running my mouth on. So it's been interesting. So, all right, Carla, let's get you unmuted. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning.
Morning. Let's talk about stopping at enough.
Okay. So, where do I start?
What was the
I've just been like I felt like I had it, like after I started and I was going strong and everything, and then it seems like when things start to change in my life, that's when I let things kind of go to the side.
All
Right.
right, so let me say that is not what actually happens. And tell me how this feels because right now you're blaming yourself, like stressors, like life happens.
Yes.
For some reason, we think when we're going to diet that, like, well, I need to wait to the perfect time, which never happens in life. Like, I don't have one week that goes by where I say it was an easy week. So all these people who were like, I had months of, success, I'm like, good for you, because I don't have one fucking week in my life ever where something's not trying to derail me. So, what actually happens is that you hit a period where something happens in your life. It's not you letting things go or you forgetting things. It's my habit brain for these types of stressful situations immediately lights up to say, here's how you handle when this is going on. Because you haven't hit that moment yet to have to practice enough in those types of situations. So it's like having a brand new experience. I want you to think about the difference between you saying, something happens and I let things go versus things happen and I've not practiced that stuff yet. This is
Okay.
like new. So I have to take what I've learned, but I'm applying it in a brand new way.
Okay.
It's like if you were to, have you ever driven a stick shift?
Yeah.
Okay. And you've driven an automatic.
Yes.
All right. Let's say you had only driven an automatic car your entire life, and you're a well-versed driver. And then suddenly you go to a rental car place because your car's broke down. They're like, here's a stick shift. You wouldn't be like, oh my God, I just can't apply all my driving skills. I've been driving forever. What happened? I've let go of all my skills. We'd be like, I mean, I know how to drive, but I don't really know how to do it this way. This is some shit.
Right.
So that's all that's really happened. So just knowing that, I think, helps set the stage for, oh, this isn't something broken in me. So what's you think in your life where it's like, all right, now stopping at enough's harder?
Well, my daughter started college this past year, right? And I started teaching on the side of my full-time job. I actually, in the fall, I took some classes and then I started teaching in the spring. And my son's going through some stuff, and it's just I also started working out, so I'm like adding stuff to my day and then getting home late, and I eat in front of the TV a lot, eating out a lot.
Yeah, so all right. But I need to know from your brain, when I eat out, what does that have anything to do with enough?
Right.
Tell me what
And a
goes on
lot
in
of
your
times,
brain. The reason why
yeah.
I'm saying eating out enough is one of the reasons why stopping at enough is now hard. Why? Why is eating out different than anything else?
I think it just depends, because a lot of times I'm good at it. And then, like yesterday, I did fine. I went to a conference at work and we had lunch and I filled my plate and I only ate 1.5 tamales and some of the salad and a little bit of chips, right? And I was full. And one of the ladies next to me was like, "Oh, are you done with your food?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm done." And she's like, "Okay, I'll take your plate, you know?" And she took my plate for me. But sometimes I think it is the social factor. Like if you're around a bunch of people and then everybody's still eating, so then you're like done and you're like, "Okay, I'm not gonna eat," but they don't take your plate yet. So then you're picking at it as time goes by. The stuff that
Well,
when
you're
it
talking about it
changes.
as if you, wait a minute. You're talking about that situation as if another human doesn't take my plate, there's no option but to pick at your food.
I know there's an option not to, but it's what I do.
Right. But if you know that you're going to be tempted to do that, what else could you do other than be like, well, I'm at the mercy of table cleaners. You know, if table cleaners aren't in my life, Corinne, I just can't lose weight.
I could call somebody over, ask somebody to take it for me, or
You have
maybe
a napkin or do you eat like a Mongol?
I could put my napkin on.
Well, let me ask you this. If you put your napkin over your plate and other people witness you doing it, and they're all still talking and they're all having conversation, would you just be like, oh my God, when other people are eating and still doing it, I'm gonna have to rip the napkin off and just go back at it.
No,
Why
I
would you
wouldn't
not
do
do that? Why would you not? What changes in
that. Because you put the napkin on it, so then it kind of like feels like it's dirty. The food's dirty because you put your napkin on it. I don't know. And so like I think that that would look weird to go
okay,
back and eat your
so
food again.
this is what I want you to see. You eating and picking and stuff has nothing to do with what anybody else is doing. In one scenario, your brain is like, well, if everybody else eats, then I should be eating. So that's a thought. Or we could have the thought, it's weird to pick at your food when you're done.
Yeah,
You
that's
know,
true.
Because it is kind of weird that if your body, like it's to me, it's weirder to be like, you know what? When I have goals to lose weight and I want to be healthy and all these other things, it's kind of weird that I would eat simply because other people I don't know that well are still eating. To me, that's a weirder behavior than like, oh my God, my body has signaled enough. I
Yeah.
think it would be really normal to be like, I've had enough. And if you're thinking that it's normal to stop at enough instead of it's weird to be sitting there, you're more likely to take a napkin and place it over, or you're going to call someone over. You're going to push your plate away. I guarantee you, all of you, if you're around other humans, if you do anything outward that signals you're done, you will be thinking like that. I don't want everybody to think I'm weird because I just said I'm done, and then they're going to watch me go like, well, let me grab the plate from over from here. Because let's say you ran out of food, and your hypothesis is correct that if people are still eating, you should be picking. Then why aren't you picking up their plate? Well, I could never sit here and not just nibble.
Yeah, that's true.
It's about your brain. And it is about making decisions. So if you know that one of your big triggers is when I'm eating with other people, if when I know consciously when I'm done eating, I have to also make a conscious outward expression that I'm done. That has to be bookended. And that is on me. I cannot wait for wait staffs to take care of my enough signals. That's my job. Okay. What else? So that, like, tell me a good example though of where you're not stopping at enough right now that you know is blocking your weight loss.
Like at the end of the day, if whether I got some takeout or I made food, eating with my daughter in front of the TV, and it's like I'm eating because I'm hungry, but because there's other things going on, it's like I'll get to a point where a lot of times where I'm like, oh my gosh, I ate too much because like I wasn't paying attention, right?
Okay.
But I also feel like I don't know how to deal with like how to relax and how to like just end my day not, so rushed and then also eating and then trying to relax at the same time and taking care of things. And I don't know. I just feel like my end of the day is really bad. I don't have a hard time usually with breakfast. That's very,
Nobody does. It's very rare. You wake up with a fresh brain in the morning. When we get to our day, we don't have a fresh brain anymore. The logical part of your brain is at its height when you wake up. So it is, if you think about when you sleep, your brain spends the entire night reorgan. It's healing your body from any of the stressors. So it's doing a lot of repair work on the body. But more importantly, it's like every night your brain partitions itself. It's like, oh, okay. Let me throw these thoughts over here. Let me put this over here. She did this a bunch today. Let me try to make sure that I put that on repeat. Like it's when you're sleeping, your brain is doing a lot of work on itself. And so it's like starting, you know how like if your house, if somebody came in right now and did a thorough, deep cleaning of your house, and you just look around, you're like, wow. I mean, everything's put away, it's all clean. Like they've organized everything. That's what your brain does every night. So when you wake up in the morning, it's like energized and ready to go. And it's just like, I can make decisions and I can think about your future and I can do all these things. Then as the day goes on, if you are making a lot of decisions on the fly instead of planned decisions, every little decision that you make during the day drains its battery. And it untidies things. It's like a toddler who goes into its playroom when it's been organized. And it's like all day long, you're letting the toddler go in there and just rip toys out. And you walk in at the end of the day and you're like, what the fuck just happened? That's how our brain looks at the end of the day. It's very cluttered, very messy, that kind of thing. So one thing that you can do is think about your day and how many things can you make easier in your day for you. So like, for example, I know I always have to work out after this call. And I hate working out in the afternoons, even though that is when I have to work out. And so I can dress up for y'all head to toe like I used to. And then that would force me to have to go all the way to my bedroom, decide to put on workout clothes, decide to hang my good clothes back up, get my tennis shoes on, do all the things. Or I can come to the call from basically titties down. It's workout time. So I'm always showing y'all what, like, this is the real thing I'm wearing. This is my boot cut. I got my flip-flops on, so I can easily throw my tennis shoes on. Like, there's very little roadblocks. This is my pre-workout drink with my creatine in it. Like, I set myself up so that when I get done with this call, all I got to deal with is the version of me that just doesn't want to go to the gym. I don't have to deal with the version who's like, "And you don't have your clothes on, and you didn't do your drink yet, and you didn't do this." Like, I take all of that out. So I only have one problem to solve. Get in the goddamn car. That's the problem to solve. If I get in the car, then I can grouse all the way there, but I'm more likely to do it because I'm driving. And when I go in, I almost always am like, "You know what? You're so tired. We're just going to try our workout. We'll see what happens." All I got to do is decide to do set one. Once I get going, though, then I'm like, I finish. But the reason why I can make myself do those few things is because a lot of the other things I took out the problem. So, one thing you want to do in order to have more energy and bandwidth in the evening to be able to relax is to take, like, it's not so much taking things off your plate. It's like, how can I make anything easier during the day? Anything. Packing bags, you know, or pre-telling your daughter, like, first thing in the morning, we're going to order takeout tonight. Here's where I'd like to order. Here's what I'm going to order. And when we get it, I'm going to put half of it in the fridge immediately before I even sit down with it. Then you don't have to worry so much about trying to stop it enough and like thinking really hard. If you know you're tired at night, we make decisions and I like, especially if you've got like somebody you're eating with, I just tell the partner. First thing in the morning, when I'm brave and I'm like, "I'm gonna lose weight today," and all the things, that brain will speak up for me. If I'm saving it for later, when Chris and I order Uber Eats, I'm not telling him shit. I'm gonna be like, "Hey, we should order from here. We haven't done it in a long time. It'll be so much fun." And I am just like eating like a donkey. That version of me in the evenings is tired, and she doesn't care about her long-term goals. She only cares about momentary relief. So my morning self has to prepare her. The other thing that I would do if I was you, when you talk about how do you relax, why can't you just relax? Like, what is stopping you from rolling up at home saying like, what do you mean by that? It's hard for me to picture it.
So I feel like I'm going through the steps of relaxing because I do very little once I get home. So I usually get home like 6:30, 7, right? And
Yes.
then figure out dinner, eat, clean up after dinner, and then, maybe watch some TV and go to bed. So like I feel like those are steps like that you should be doing in the evening and
Except for figuring out
relaxing.
dinner. When are we figuring out dinner?
Yeah, it's usually once I get home.
Yeah. Why? Tell me why you ask the exhausted version of you to be like, "And can I please put something else on your plate? I don't think you did enough today. You really should have to figure out dinner and clean the kitchen."
I guess it's like in the morning, a lot of times I can't decide on something either because I'm thinking about like what's in the kitchen. And then I'll be like, and then I think about what other people like. And if they're not going to like to eat it, and then it makes it hard for me to decide at any time of the day because there's so many factors.
Who
And
are all
then I
these
just let
people
it
that you're
go.
trying to feed? Tell me the number of people you're trying to feed besides you.
Just two.
All these people.
Yeah.
Did you even hear what you just said? You were like, you talked about it as if you've got a 12-person cricking crew that you've got to feed every night. You literally said, I've got all these people I have to think about. What is it, you and your daughter
And
and your
my
son?
son.
All right, and how old are the kids?
Oh, they're adults.
Why are you figuring out their dinner?
Well, because if I'm gonna cook, then I might as well cook for all of us. And then if they, like, I don't
Wait a minute.
know.
Do you, but this is something we have to question. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
Right.
But if your goal is I've got to figure out how to relax at night because the only way I'm doing it right now is by overeating. You need to make a decision. Do you want to be cooking for them at this age or not? It's not that it's, I don't think it's bad at all. Sometimes we have
Yeah.
family dinner too. I don't do family dinner at the expense of myself though.
Okay.
If you're only doing it because, well, I just never even questioned whether or not I should do it. I never even considered that this is actually adding to my plate at night. Not, like if you were cooking a meal and you were sitting there telling me, Corinne, now look, my kids, I don't have much time with them. They're going to fly the nest. I want family meals. This is my precious time with my babies. You would not be exhausted cooking. You would love figuring out what all you're going to eat. Like it would
Right.
be like, domestic goddess time. We had a lady the other day talking in the group about how she loves to bake, loves it. Like that is her love language. She wants to bake. She wants to cook a big meal every night and stuff. And I was coaching her on it. And I was like, she thought the only way to lose weight was she's like, I'm just gonna have to give up my favorite hobby. And I was like, no, but you don't have to keep eating just because like she was eating fast enough because she'd worked so hard to make the meal and it was so enjoyable. She was sad.
Oh,
It was over.
yes.
I was like, we just need to work on the sadness. We need to figure out how to like apply when it's over. Like, I'm so glad I get to lose weight and cook. You don't sound like her. You sound more like, well, I got to do this after a long, hard day
Yes,
and never
that's how I
really
feel.
questioning. Yeah. So, what if you just were like, the only thing I figure out now is what the fuck I'm eating. And if they want some of it, I'll share. If they don't, they're like, I'll be honest, my child is 22 going on 23. I don't think I've fed him in 3 years now.
Oh wow.
And
Yeah,
my child
my
has
son, he
autism and
doesn't
he
care.
takes care of it himself, all meals. I'm like, you know how to go to the grocery store now? You know how to go to the, he knows how to eat at a gas station. He knows how to go to McDonald's. He knows how to order a salad. He knows how to go buy chicken soup when he wants to just eat at home. He knows how to do that stuff. I'm like, I never think about what Logan's eating ever.
Yeah. I know my son, he doesn't care. He'll just whatever. My daughter, she's 19, and I think I still feel like, because she's just a year since she graduated from high school, and she has some mental health stuff going on, and so I feel like I have to be more sensitive with her. And if I just like stopped cooking or stopped making sure she ate, that she would feel bad about it. But I guess I could have a conversation with her and say,
You
hey,
could go ahead, say what?
like, we should start planning ahead and like, what do we want? If you want something different than what I am able and willing to make or buy, then you can make that decision and do what you want to do for yourself.
Let me ask you a question. Since your daughter's got some mental health stuff going on and whatnot, with you talking to her about the importance of planning ahead and whatnot. What is the positive message that she's going to learn from that? That right now, you just coming home, eating till you're stuffed and unable to demonstrate relaxing other than with food, what would the benefit to her actually be as a woman in particular?
Yeah, that's a good point. She would actually, she would, yeah, she could definitely learn more of that. She's done a lot for herself. And she's lost a lot of weight in the last year. And but I think, and she makes a lot better choices, I think, than I do sometimes. But I think she still has that diet brain. So I try to get that away from her as much as I can. And so I think that's true. Like if we did model that better, if I modeled that better for her and included her, then she could learn to do it for herself and take that with her as the way that she lives.
Yeah, because the one thing that we want to remember is that one thing that I never wanted Logan to learn was that number one, that I didn't know how to take care of myself other than with food. If the
Right.
only time your child ever sees you happy is when you're eating, relaxed is when you're eating, able to, somehow modulate your emotions is when you're eating. They see it. And up until about the age of 26, children are still, their reasoning brain is not completely formed until about 26. So, up until that age, they do a lot more modeling what they see than they actually do absorbing information. Like at our age, we listen to Corinne, we get coached, go through the courses, and we're like, now that's how I'm supposed to be doing things.
Yeah.
When we're up until about 26, we actually take the majority of our cues as to how we are supposed to act and do from what we witness. And so a lot of our,
Yeah.
especially our girls, because they're looking to their mothers, they're watching you and they're thinking, wow, I'm supposed to come home every night and be wore the fuck out and just eat whatever I want. And that's the only thing my mom, like I only ever see my mother do self-care by eating.
Yeah.
And the other thing I want all of you to consider is not only do they see you do that, but most of the time when you're vegging out and eating, you don't look like you're enjoying it. You're literally sitting there eating like, tired. You look like you are wired. You look like you're trying to decompress. It's not like we're witnessing our parents being like, now this meal. I'm going to call that restaurant. This was divine. I got so much joy out of this. They deserve a comment. No, we're usually just like, and then we go, oh, at the end, and we look sad because we overate. They pick up on all of it. So, like for you, it's thinking about, gosh, how can I during the day make more decisions? And communicate that in some way to my daughter, where when I talk about doing it, you talk about it as, like, I've just realized, like, I want to take better care of myself. I've just realized I want to be able to come home and truly relax. I don't want to be figuring out dinner every night. I work really hard all day. And you might even say to her, that's going to be you one day. You're going to go out and you're going to get a job. And, or, if you're in college or whatever, it's like, I want you to have your evenings where you really can relax. And that's what I'm working on. Like, I think our daughters especially need more modeling of that, not us just, working our fingers to the bone. They watch us come home, kind of. I don't know if we do it in a pissy way, but I know that I remember my mother, she'd come home and if she ever had to figure out dinner for us, it always seemed like a chore, like one more thing on the to-do list. She's just like, where do y'all want to eat tonight? I'm just so tired. Let's just order. I never learned that food could be enjoyable, a real experience. I was always just watching food be a way to just get it done Because like life sucks.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I think those are some things that I can start working on. I know I need to be better at planning. And I think if I not just plan in the morning, but also plan like the week ahead, at least to know like that I have the food that I want to make, or the what days am I gonna need to eat out or order something, things like that, that it'll be easier if I do it that way than waiting until, like last night, I'm sitting there playing a game and saying I'm hungry. Are you hungry? Yeah, I'm hungry. What should we eat? I just kept sitting there playing a game. And I didn't, at least yesterday, I didn't overeat, but I didn't eat until like 8:30, and I ate just the leftover tamale. But it was, just such a silly way to be, right? Just sitting there playing, even though I'm hungry, and not
I
being
don't
able to
think
make
there's,
that decision.
I do not think that that was silly. I think
Okay.
that playing the game is a good way for you to unwind. I play my games every night, every single night. Like, I play four different games every night. I think not having a plan for so that when you are hungry, I am just a big believer, all of you. And there's enough opportunities in life to be spontaneous. We go on trips, we have last minute invites, we have plenty of time to be spontaneous. I think we put, though, too much emotional drain on ourselves to be making decisions, just like last night. Like I was in the middle of being entertained and stuff, and then all of a sudden I realize I'm hungry. And because I hadn't planned anything, I had to like use up more of my mental energy around what should I eat? What should I eat? And that's where so many of us start saying, like, I just wish I didn't have to think about food so much. Like, well, yeah, because most of the time when we're thinking about food, we're not thinking about it with our best brain. We're thinking about it in the moments when we're stressed, we're tired, we're depleted. And it's so hard to make decisions that it makes everything feel like everything with losing weight feels hard. And it's because we're waiting until the hardest moments to decide what we're going to do. It's like you would never, like, if you had a big work project, you wouldn't be like, okay, I have this big day tomorrow full of meetings. I got to be on my A game and I got to turn in my project. Here's what I should do: stay up all night long, don't sleep, so I can roll up in there at my, I want to be really tired, stressed out, and exhausted. And then present and make a lot of decisions.
Yeah,
We
definitely
would
wouldn't do
that.
that.
So let's not do that also with our food.
Okay.
I like the
Thanks
idea of you doing
for
it at the beginning of the week. I think that's
yeah.
a really good, that saves you from having to do it in the mornings. We used to always teach, I don't know how long you've been in OBS, but for years, I had everybody plan a week out in advance. You put Sunday. That is what we did. It was Sunday planning, Sunday prep. Like that is how I taught it forever. But a lot of people couldn't do it. And so I will just give you the rundown. I still do it that way. On Sunday, I look at the calendar, I look at everything we got going on, and I plan all my meals. Because I don't want to be caught on a day where I know I'm gonna have to miss lunch because I didn't plan to eat earlier. I just don't want to do that stuff. Y'all right? Then
Sneezing.
I plan like dinners. Like this is what I'm gonna eat this week. I just like to have it all done that way, and then my brain is free. Then each day I do write down my 24-hour plan, but all I'm doing is looking at my weekly plan, and I'm just like, okay, this still works. Because sometimes what I think is gonna happen on a Sunday, by Thursday, the week has changed. It's not going to work. So that gives me the freedom to change it that morning.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I felt like when I've done that in the past, when I planned the week, that it gets messed up. And so then I feel like I'm off plan. But if I go in the morning and think about it again, that
Yeah.
allows me the time to rework it if I need
You're
to.
just
So,
confirming it at that point, right?
yeah.
You're just confirming that that's still going to work. And if it is, you don't have to do hardly any. It's like a, 5 second decision. If you
Yeah.
notice, it's like, oh, this isn't going to work today, or I don't really feel like, cooking. I know I'm not going to feel like cooking dinner tonight. Then you have time to change it.
Yeah.
And I will tell all of you, there's nothing wrong with being off plan. I think y'all get so like, oh my, like when I say you are off plan, you fill in the blank with what? That means I'm bad. That means I did it wrong. That means this. I always think of if I don't follow the plan, I just want to know why. Because sometimes not following the plan, I've got really good reasons for it.
Right.
There's no problem with that change. This is a habit I would want to establish. Just like if I have to break my plan because I realize that what I was going to eat for dinner is now ruined, don't want
Yeah.
to, demonize myself over that. I just want to eat
Yeah.
something else and say, like, yeah, I want to form the habit of not eating ruined food. Not a problem. But then it gives me an opportunity to say, like, all right, did I make a good choice? What did I do and why did I do it? It gives me time to introspect. Sometimes I'm like, you made a great choice. You're really on your A game. You can have something happen, switch your plan, and follow through like a boss. It just wasn't what you planned.
Right.
Sometimes I look at it and I'm like, whoop, this is why I check, because that reason I don't like. That is not a reason I want to repeat. Like saying, we're gonna go out tonight and get drinks because I was pissed off all day about, the yard and the trash didn't get picked up. Like I'm just like pissed about
Yeah.
things. Then I know, like, all right, that's not a habit I want to repeat. So now I want to
Right.
figure out what was triggering me. What could I have done different? Was there anything I could do? That's how we get better. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Bye.
Mouse. Sorry, y'all. My mouse goes to donk. It turns itself off. It's a Bluetooth one. Okay, Jillian, you're next. Anybody else who wants coaching, make sure you raise your hand too, by the way. And if you have questions, you can pop those over into the Q&A also. Any questions? Like if you, MJ's here, she can answer questions. Hey, Jillian, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing good. What did you, you wanted coaching on the, what was it? Which timer is it?
Well, I'm using Slow Eats, I think
Slow eats.
it's called.
Okay. Okay.
So I am really enjoying this month because I think slowing down is one of the major keys for me. Like, holy cow. But I've noticed that when I'm using my bite timer, there's some emotions that are coming up, and I just kind of want to talk through those and see, I don't know, just process those with you.
That'd be great. All right. But well, when you use it, you said some emotions are coming up. Which emotions are coming up?
Okay, there's like, I'm saying good and bad, but I don't mean good and bad. I mean, there's just some kind of negative, some positive. So there's a lot. I've made a list. I've
That's
been
fine.
keeping track. So I've had some fear, anxiety, boredom, confusion and sadness. And I've also had curiosity, hope, surprise, and peace.
Okay, so that's good. You're getting both sides.
Yes.
All right. So we obviously have some kind of curiosity, hope, and peace is the ones we want to keep. But if you had to look at fear, anxiety, and all the other ones, the more negative emotions, because there are positive and negative emotions. If you had a scale, you'd be
Yeah.
like, these are the negative ones, these are the positive. The thing for everybody to remember is there's nothing wrong with negative or positive emotions or even labeling them that way. Because sometimes we have positive emotions that like aren't good for the situation.
Yeah.
Like if somebody's abusing you, you not necessarily want to be in love with them all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then on the opposite side, we have negative emotions. Sometimes we want fear. If I am with someone who I shouldn't be, I need to be having fear. It's going to save my life. You know, if I'm walking down a dark alley and somebody's coming at me with a knife, I don't want to be like, I need to stop, drop, and do thought work to feel better about this situation because all of a sudden I'm scared. We wouldn't want that. So we
Right.
don't want to ever demonize either side. So, of all of those feelings, what is the one that you think you're having the most, or is the one that you're like, I really am curious why I would even feel this?
I would say the anxiety.
Yeah. Well, I had circled fear and anxiety
Yeah, those
as
are the,
like, all right. So when you're using it, why are you, what's making you anxious?
I know it's waiting, so I've been playing around a little bit with how much time. I started out a minute, and that was felt like an eternity. Some of it also depends on like what I'm eating. If it's, I got to cut a bunch of stuff and eat, but I've settled around 45, 50 seconds, and I'm working on chewing slower, but I'm just like, I sit there and I'm just like, I just start getting like, I think that's where some of the boredom comes in, where I'm just like, I gotta wait. I gotta wait to take another bite. It's not so much that I'm thinking you gotta hurry through this, but it's a lot of times I just like want to get it over with. Even
Yeah,
if I'm
well,
enjoying the
that's normal.
food.
Yeah, and I think that boredom is fine. I don't even think you need to work on it. Honestly, the boredom is coming in because there's a change in your behavior pattern. It's like your brain is just like, well, I'm just used to you eating so much faster. What the fuck am I supposed to do now? You know, and it's like until it normalizes to a slower eating pattern, it's going to be. It's going to either be bored or it's going to be anxious to eat another bite simply because you're doing it differently. You just have to think about it. Like anytime, like if I have to go to the DMV and I don't get to bring my phone with me and I'm going to have to wait an hour and just sit there with my thoughts, I am going to be bored. And I'm going to need to just be bored and just be like, all right, this sucks. All right, I can handle boredom because I'm not used to waiting around without any distractions. You're just not used to eating without like a certain pace or a certain distraction or whatever. So your brain is just getting used to this. But let's think about the anxiety and decide if it's even a problem.
Well, one of the things I've noticed myself doing in order to cope with the amount of time I have to sit and wait is I'm taking larger bites of food so that it like takes up more time in between, my little timer going off. So I'm just like, I have more to do, so I'm not getting, so I'm avoiding that boredom. I think that's the boredom is stressing me out apparently.
Why is it stressing you out?
I don't like waiting.
Okay.
I'm an impatient lady.
Okay.
So I think
Can
that's,
you just,
go ahead.
while you eat, can you just acknowledge, I'm impatient, but I'm going to do it the way I'm going to do it because I agreed with myself or I taught myself this. Just like sometimes feelings like this in situations like this, we don't need to feel good. We need to be aware of how we're feeling. We just need to label it. Like, I notice I'm taking bigger bites. I'm not going to do that this next time. I'm going to, like, if I get anxious, I'm just going to remind myself this is just anxiety because I don't like waiting. Like, I want you to think about, because right now you're kind of going through it more along the lines of all I'm at, kind of what I'm asking you to do is to say, rather than I feel anxious, this is a problem, to go to I notice I'm anxious, and that's okay. Because what's the worst that happens if you just sit every meal for a while and you're anxious while you're eating and practicing eating slower?
The worst that happens,
Yeah.
rationally or emotionally?
Both.
My rational brain says that like nothing's going to happen. I'll just, it'll pass eventually, or I'll be able to talk myself out of the anxiety. My emotional brain does not like to feel bad feelings. And so it kind of it's something I've been working on a long time, but like it'll kick in and start trying to fix it. It's like I want to fix everything.
Well, yeah, everybody's brain does that. There's not one single human that has negative emotion where their brain doesn't immediately perceive threat, fix.
Okay.
Fix at all costs.
Yeah.
Not at the best cost. It's like fix at all costs.
Yeah.
So let's decide or what we want to think about. If there's rationally, the worst that's going to happen is for until you normalize to a new eating pattern. Right now, you're going to feel this level of anxious. What does it feel like in your body?
I get a little sensation in my chest, unease, some like a feeling of urgency.
So you get a little flutter in your chest.
Like whenever I have any uncomfortable emotions, like if I'm getting angry or I'm getting sad, like I feel it all in my chest. It starts to come up from there. So it's physical discomfort.
Okay. So that's some of the things to talk to yourself about. Let me ask you this. When you describe it to me right now, I'm using my bite timer. In between bites, I feel some anxiousness. It is in my chest, and it's going to last probably about 30. I'm assuming it takes you about 10 seconds to chew, maybe 5 seconds.
Yeah, more or less.
And you've got your bite timer set to what?
Like
45 seconds?
40, 45, 50 seconds, depends.
Okay. So we're going to say just on the high end, I've got to sit with my chest feeling the way it does for 45 seconds at a time while I'm eating. Now that's our actual circumstance we're dealing with right now.
Yes.
Bite timer, 45 seconds, chest feels tight until the meal's over. What are
Yeah.
your thoughts about that?
It is something that I'm willing to sit through, but the thought of it makes me uncomfortable.
Why? Why does it make you uncomfortable?
Because I don't like that. I don't like feeling like that.
Okay, so that's good to know. Are you okay with not liking it?
Yes.
Then that's the conversation you got to be having.
Okay.
You can do one of two things. You can just like decide the anxiety's not as big a deal as like as if I was having anxiety about, my paycheck or like if I had a loved one dying or something. There's like scales of anxiety. It, like sometimes it's very helpful for people to take, it's like especially a feeling like an anxiety. I'm wondering if there's even if that's the exact feeling. If you were to think about anxiety on a whole, where you land, because you've also said unease, which
Yeah.
feels softer and more tender than anxiety.
Yeah.
When I think of anxiety, I think of somebody who is like this. Usually, when you have anxiety, your brain freaks out and thinks it has to solve it exactly right now, or bad things are going to happen. Unease could be more maybe what you're feeling. I'm not used to this. I get bored really easily. And sometimes, like, different feelings will have similar physical sensations, but there's like wide range of degree. That's why I was saying, like, you could just say, when I'm eating with the bite timer, you could remind yourself, I'm probably going to feel like, on a scale of 1 to 10, a level 2 to 3 anxiety. I'm going to prepare for that.
Okay.
I think I can handle it. It's worth it. I just won't like it. Nobody, and you can just tell yourself, Nobody likes feeling this way, but my brain will get used to it, will just get used to this. And then one day this will be my normal. I won't even be thinking about this anymore. Now, if it was a level 10, like between every bite, I'm freaking out. I think I'm not going to get enough. I think, like, somebody's going to take my plate away. What if I get hungry later? What if this never works? What if I never lose weight? Oh my God, I'll be fat the rest of my life and all these other things are going. Sometimes people have that level of anxiety.
Yeah.
If your brain's not doing all that, I think it's just literally telling yourself, like, I've talked this out. I don't like the discomfort, but that's part of habit change too. And that's what I'm working on right now is I'm changing a lifelong pattern of eating. I'm getting curious. And then sometimes I'm even curious. Sometimes I don't even feel the anxiety. And like having that conversation, I think it'll make it more palatable. I guess that's a pun, but it will make the experience more palatable to you. I
Yeah.
don't know. What are your thoughts?
I think it is. I mean, there's a lot of times I'm able to just kind of talk myself through it. I guess I'm probably with, the impatience comes the, well, why isn't this resolved yet? Like, I've been doing this for a week. Shouldn't it just be like, I'm
Well, I'm going to
done.
give some. I don't know if this is going to be relieving or not, but you're working on a substantial habit change. The rate of which we chew, you have been doing that probably since you were, since you the first time they put food in your mouth. How old are you?
46.
Yeah, you've got 45 years of experience
Yeah.
doing it one way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, in one week, you're like, why is this not solved? I don't understand why my brain keeps wanting to like eat the way it always has. I mean, for God's sakes, a week compared to 45 years, it takes usually 260 days of practicing a new pattern before your brain really grooves that this is our new way. And it doesn't matter if you have a habit that you've only been doing for 6 months or if you have a habit that you've been doing for 45 years. The brain doesn't really, an error that many of us think when it comes to habits is that the longer we've been doing it, the more like it's part of who we are, it's ingrained. Neuroplasticity is proving that that's very wrong.
Okay.
Your brain grooves a pattern. It's like, all right, until you tell me to not do this anymore, I'm going to keep doing it. And I'm never going to let go of this pattern. You will have this pattern stored in your brain until you draw your last breath. And then you'll work on a new one. Your brain will be like, all right, she seems to keep doing this thing. She's eating slower. She's been doing this for a while now. Sometimes, like, you'll go back to your old way. And then you'll go back to the new way. Every time you go back to the new way, it's not like starting over. You don't lose ground. You just relight up the pattern and you start grooving it again. And it just gets more and more. The more you do it, even if you have days you forget or you go back or whatever you think you're doing, that pattern, they don't just erode. It's almost like flipping a light switch on and off. You either have it on or you have it off. And then when you turn it back on, it's right back to where you were when you left off.
Okay.
Your job is to know that it will take you about 200 and something days of doing this mindfully before your brain is like, oh, I really should let go of signaling to eat the old way because she just keeps doing it this way. Now, that doesn't mean that day one and day 260 feel exactly the same. The longer you go, the less you're thinking about it, the less that you care. You get used to practicing. You get used to setting your timer. You don't have to, like, there's so many things that just get easier and easier and easier the more you do it. But it takes about that long before we get used to something. That's why, like, somebody can have Like if you know, I always use the dominant hand where, like, let's say you break your
Yeah.
dominant hand. If you had to wear the cast for a year, that's why people will say, even after months of not being able to use their hand, they're still trying to reach. When people have a limb amputated, it takes them sometimes years before they quit trying to reach for something and they don't even have the arm anymore. But their brain used it for so long that it's just firing off quick to do things. And so it just sends the signal, grab with your right hand. It's like, oh God, we don't even have a right arm anymore. So don't be, you know, like sometimes it's comforting to know that my brain is just anxious because it keeps wanting to do it this way. And it thinks when I'm trying to change it, that it's like, why are we doing this? I've gotten so good at this way. And that's really all that's going on.
That's very comforting, actually. Like, that's really helpful. Yeah. I want to get things done quickly, and it's not always, I can't always do it that way.
Yeah, that's true. But what you can get done quickly is just doing it every day.
Yes.
You know, every day that you don't do it is adding time to the process.
Yeah.
But I think in a few more weeks, a lot of the anxiety will die down. I think
Okay.
it'll be so low level. I don't even think it'll be anxiety anymore. It'll just be, you know, you'll probably move more into being bored more than you are anxious. And then once you get through the boredom part, where you're just like, is this the way it's going to be? And it's kind of like, well, yeah. And then if you get some positive benefits from it, second, your brain starts getting rewarded for a new behavior rather than talked about like it's the worst thing you're ever doing to yourself, then your brain wants to do it more. And then it wants to think about the enjoyable parts. It loves a good payoff. So if like if you are doing your bike timer, make sure you're very careful at the end when you're finished with your meal about how you tell the story.
Yeah.
Don't say, man, I'm just so impatient. You know, I hate it when this process takes so long. You know, I just wish that I was already there. If you are sitting around and you are begrudging your process, your brain is taking notes and it's like, why would I ever motivate you to do this? You seem to hate it. I don't want to motivate you to do shit that you absolutely hate and talk trash about. But if we at the end, if you just say like, I am so glad I'm doing this. You know, I'm learning how to be bored. It felt a little anxious. It wasn't that bad. You know, I'm learning my enough. If you and then you and you do start losing some weight or whatever, you start marking that, your brain is like, maybe we should do that. Like she has such a good attitude about it. I'm getting dopamine hits from this. If you deny yourself dopamine hits and all you do is like bitch and moan, which I'm not saying you are, but so many of us,
Yeah.
like we do really good things for ourselves that we decide we want to do for ourselves. And all the way that we're doing it, all we do is bitch about it. And then we wonder why we never get motivated to do it. It's like, well, quit bitching. That's the first way. Okay.
Yeah, I've noticed that one thing I'm really grateful for is that you paired the chart, the doable hunger chart with this, because I've been using that with the bite timer as well, and I've found that what I thought was my enough is actually more. And so that's actually been really, I think, a game changer for me. So I'm really grateful for that, because it's like, oh, once I get to the point of heaviness, which I thought was the enough, I'm actually like past. And so I've been able to like take a few steps back. And so when I think I might be at enough, I actually set a different timer. So I sit for 5 minutes and see like if I'm done. There's a little drama that comes up there, just like, oh, you're gonna miss out. But I'm able to kind of get through
You're
it.
gonna, what is it? What is the drama that you slyly said?
I'm gonna you're gonna miss out. Like, like
Yeah, what are
there's
you gonna
more
miss out on?
the delicious food.
No, you ate some. You
I
couldn't
know.
even
Well,
tell.
that's why I'm talking to myself. And I'm like, no,
Yes,
cool.
that's exactly right. You want to
Yeah.
remind yourself,
I can
like,
eat it
wait a
later.
minute, I think I just ate. I didn't miss out on anything.
So that's it's just been a lot of discovery and a lot of really uncovering of, you know, despite the unease and the kind of little bit of discomfort, it's been really helpful. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I just think for you, you're right on track. You're absolutely on track. You're doing it right. Everything that you're experiencing and feeling is probably what you should. Like, if you're making habit change, there should be some anxiety, y'all, because you're going from doing something one way to doing something another. There's always anxiety. Like, if you've been billing this a certain way at your job forever and they change out the billing system, everybody's going to be like feeling rough for a little while. It's like, I'm having to relearn. I'm having to do it in a new way. And, as they say, can you teach an old dog new tricks? It's like, you can, but old dogs really don't like it. If even a dog doesn't want to like do something new, humans are really, with the way that our brain works, we're really not going to want to. We got all the emotion on top. So I think you're feeling just the same. I think the place to give you just a little bit of breather is just that, oh, this is the way it's supposed to be. It's not a problem that I'm experiencing some anxiety and friction and boredom. That's part of habit change. And it won't be long before those feelings do start going away and you're just consciously doing it. But at some point, your brain will flip to, this is going to pay off. And it already is. Like, I'm discovering things I didn't even know. Like, so your brain's already flipping to see, man, there's some good stuff that comes along with this too. And that's where you're going to find, I think, just a little bit more ease for yourself of like, it's not a problem that I'm having anxiety. I've got some heaviness in my chest, but this is just part of retraining myself. A physical behavior that I've practiced since I was a, since the moment they put food in my mouth. So, okay. Thank you. This was good.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
You're
it.
welcome. All righty. Bye-bye. Go. Oops. All right. Melissa. Melissa, are you the one about the mom? Oh, wait, the other person lowered her hand. So I'll just go with Melissa. Anybody else who's going to want coaching, they need to raise your hand. Oh my gosh. Y'all, I'm going to tell you right now, my eyes are so allergy irritated right now, like bad. I am using Pataway drops. I am doing everything you can think of. And I am just like all the time. I don't even have eyeshadow on today. I was like, no fucking way. I'm not even going to attempt it. I did put on mascara, but all right. I know what we're coaching on. I think, what was it, your mother? It's your
Yeah,
mother, right?
it's my mother. Yes.
Okay. All right, everybody. Listen up. It's time to talk about mothers. We know we love to talk about mothers and Nobia. It's like our favorite topic. I saw her posting about her mom, and I was like, oh, please, God, let me coach you. Because I think this is what I want y'all to pay attention to. It's not so much our mothers. We want to be thinking about, how much power and control over our emotions do we want to give other humans? Okay, that's what I want everybody to pay attention to, because whether or not you have a good relationship with your mom or not, almost every person who can fog a mirror has somebody in their life that they're like, now that person triggers me. So that's what we want to pay attention to. Okay, tell us a. Let me just give us the rundown of what happened so that we can get to the coaching part.
So I was hospitalized last Saturday. I was turning yellow. I needed my gallbladder out, blah blah. I've never had a good relationship with my mother. I wasn't even going to tell her I was in the hospital. My sister texted her and said, "Hey, blah blah, Melissa's in the hospital. They're going to take her gallbladder out tomorrow." And my mother, before I was even I had surgery at 3 o'clock. I got discharged at 9 o'clock. And at 8:30, she texted my sister and said, "Hey, when's Melissa going to be out of the hospital so she can drive 45 minutes to come fix my TV?" And she never even asked me how I was doing. So I was really pissed that day, and I kind of let it go. But then this morning, she texted. She still hasn't asked how I am. And then she is like,
Hey, so can you come out and fix my TV? And I'm like, I'm gonna strangle her with that TV is what's gonna happen. But I don't want the when I was recovering, I was very pissed for like hours and hours. And I don't want to be so triggered and I don't want to be so pissed. I kind of want to be like a duck and just let it roll off my back.
Well, first of all, I don't think there's anything wrong with being pissed first. So, what you've recognized is I get pissed. We have to figure out why you're getting pissed. But for the future, I just want you to see like you're pro until you really do get to a point to where you drop expectations of how your mother should be. You will always get pissed first. Okay. And let me just say this, and then we'll get to reasons why you're pissed. But what I have found in my life is that it is very hard as a human to have certain people in your life where you can really just drop all your expectations for how they should be. What we want to do is get to the point to where we realize I'm pissed because of my expectations, not because of what's happening. And if I can be compassionate with myself when I'm pissed. When we are just pissed and blaming, we only have pissed off. And then we tell everybody the story. You won't believe what she did. Blah, 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 blah. And you'll go into Facebook, and these lovely women will be like, "You're right. Your mother's a bitch. She shouldn't be that way. Why do moms have to be like this?" And then everybody will dogpile, and then we're having a pissed off kumbaya. We're just throwing kindling on the fire. So I always like to remind myself, like when it comes to especially to my parents. Now with my mother, I've dropped a lot of expectations, but I've also like I don't know that I've dropped expectations, but I've come to really understand what my mom like is capable of in our relationship and what she's not. Same
Yeah,
with my
that's what
father.
I think with the comments from you and MJ. It's kind of like even in the last few days, I'm starting to think like she's just not capable. Like she doesn't talk to my niece and nephew who are grown. She treats my sister the same. It's like it's not a Melissa issue. You know what I mean? Like it's
We
not
know that.
me.
So why are you pissed that your mother didn't ask about you? So she never asked about you, and she only was concerned, like this is our circumstance right now. Melissa's mother didn't ask at all about her health situation and was very concerned about when Melissa could fix her television. Okay, that's all we got going on right now. So why were you mad about that?
So I thought after cancer, when I had cancer 3 years ago and she never asked, I was like, I'm just not going to tell her anything. So I was, it's really weird because I was okay not telling her that I was in the hospital, right? Because I was like, whatever, she's not going to do anything. But
Right,
once
because
I
she couldn't not meet your expectations. You didn't solve the problem. All you did was say, "Well, because she's like this, and it pisses me off if she doesn't do these things. I just won't tell her these things." You didn't do the mental work. Now, I will say this. That is a lovely fix. There's nothing wrong with doing it that way. Of just like, you know what? I know my mom is never going to give a shit about my own health concerns. That's not who she is. But so to protect me, I just won't tell her. But what you can't control is situ like emergencies or others. Like, it's just there's going to be times where she's going to let you down. We just want to know why are you pissed? Why, what did you like? Just be catty about it. Like, don't tell me the coachy answer. Like, I was pissed because she should.
So I feel like as a mother, she should ask me. I also get very pissed that my husband and I both have
living absent parents, and both of our good parents are dead. And I think that's what's underneath it all, right? Like, I think it's that, like, I feel hurt, betrayed. Like, the world, and even today I was talking to him, like, it's just not fucking fair. Like, it's not fair that we have two great parents that are dead, and we are both left with these parents that don't give a shit. And my husband's like, well, my dad knows that he doesn't like me. I don't like him. He at least doesn't ask me anything. So I think it's just that she doesn't want to be involved, but she still just is like, hey, before you're even discharged from the hospital, can you come fix my TV? Like, there's no insight in her. And I'm, medical. Like, how do you just treat people like that? I guess is my.
Tell me how that could be possible for your mother. Why do you think she does that?
She just doesn't. She's just not capable. And that's what I kind of started realizing this week. Like, she just doesn't. I mean, I don't know. She doesn't have friends. She doesn't talk to anyone. Like, she doesn't even call my sister unless she needs something. So I imagine that she's a very, like, lonely person. Like, she lives in a senior community, and I don't even know if she interacts there. And she has to be just a miserable person.
All right, let me, is that the story you want to have? How does it make you feel when you think, oh, the reason why she does this is because my mother's a miserable person?
Yeah, I think feeling she's just not capable. I keep saying, because I'm like, I just want her diagnosis. I'm never going to get a diagnosis. But like I want it. I want like a reason why she's like this. And I don't think there'll ever be one, except she's just
No,
not capable.
there is a reason. And this is the thing that you've got to accept. The reason is going to come from you, not from a doctor, not anywhere else. Because there's probably nothing actually wrong with her. At her age, if there was, she probably would have already been diagnosed at this point anyway. The way that I always like to think about it, that brings me peace is I need to decide what I want, like my overarching thought about my parent who has let me down in the past. What do I want that to be? And that's going to be the reason. Otherwise, I want you to think about the way you've set this relationship up. She's a miserable person. It's not fair that I'm stuck with the parent who doesn't care. If I just knew why, I'd feel better, although I'm never going to know why. So now I get to spend the rest of my life pining in limbo, confused. I've set myself up to have, like, in many ways with my mother, lots of things I can't have. And that's not my mother's fault. That is my, like, job to do for me. It's time for me to parent me and quit. As I don't want this to sound harsh, you can spend a lot of time wanting your mother to parent you the way you wish she would, or you can spend the rest of your life parenting the way you've always wanted to be parented. One way is miserable, and it's filled with a lot of piss and a lot of hurt. And the other way is filled with a lot of compassion, love, and understanding. It would be nice if we got that from our parents. Not everybody gets those parents. You got one, some get none, some get two, some get like multiple. They like Chris, like both his parents love him, and then they both got remarried, and the people who remarried love him and treat him like a son. I'm like, my stepmother, my second stepmother was bona fide crazy and went to, like, she should have been in an insane asylum, where she should have been. She tied my brother to a chair one time in the summer, all because he wouldn't take a shower and left him there all night until I called my mother the next morning because she ripped the phone cord out to tie him down. And then when I called my mother the next day at a different house to say, you got to come get us, Brenda certifiable. I'm just like, why did I get a stepmother like that? So, what I would like to do is think about the feeling underneath pissed. I think like it's just normal to be like, you know what? I wish my mother had done this stuff. And like when you're pissed, it triggers you to be like, this is that part of me that still wishes that she was different. And we go in and we parent her. So we're going to use being pissed off now as the way we heal ourselves, not as a problem. And we need to go tell 40,000 people about it so that everybody can agree, see, my mother's a bitch. And we just focus on little Melissa. And what did she need to hear from you last week? Because underneath pissed, you said something interesting. Is that you think there's actually sadness at the bottom of it. And it's where it's like, I had a good parent. Why did they have to go first? Why couldn't they be here right now? So let's talk about the sadness.
Yeah, I was thinking about this last night. So I think that I realized I was really sick, and I had two episodes which I realized is gallbladder pain, which I thought was gas. I couldn't breathe without pain. I was like, oh, it's fine. It's just whatever. And I realized just how much I was gaslit with pain as a kid. Like I had a broken wrist when I lived with my mother, and this is where I started living with my father when they got divorced in kindergarten. She never took me to the doctor until my wrist started growing back and they had to re-break it. So I think this just like has brought up a lot of that. Like I realized, like, wow, I was like sick and I was like, oh, it's fine, it's just gas, just get through the end of the day. You know, like I realized that there probably is a lot of pain in that, like, the little kid that wasn't taken care of. And I think this probably just pulled that back out because it was easier to not tell her, right? And then when my sister told her, and then she didn't check in, I was like, gosh, there it is again.
So, what do you want to do for yourself? Like, I just think that you've already got one major thought that's working well for you, which is you sound like it feels very comfortable. Do you think, like, when I'm thinking about my mother rationally, she's never going to be capable of the love and the understanding, the care, like that kind of stuff. She's not capable of ever meeting my expectations. In my book, a mother should be these things. She was not born with those traits.
And I even like she's not capable of meeting my expectations because I just went, she's not capable, right? And so like, but of meeting my expectations even puts it a little back on like, what are my expectations?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, this is where a lot of healing comes in. Sometimes, and I've done this, I even have like, I do this work with Chris a lot. We all have expectations of what we think someone who loves us should be like. They should do these things. They should say these things, blah, 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 blah. And it's always a really good idea, y'all, to take people in your life just where you have friction. You don't have to do it with everybody. But if you've got someone like who's repeatedly you're having friction with or whatever, you list out, like, what are my lists of things that I'm thinking should and shouldn't happen? And we want to be real honest about it because everybody has what they call their own mental rule books around how other people should be behaving. And this is not to say that a lot of them aren't like I think you and I agree, like, good mothers should be concerned about their child's health. But that is our expectation. Whereas some people will say a good mother lets their kids figure it out. Or a good mother prioritizes these things. Like my mother was never concerned about my health because my mother was working 2 to 3 jobs Like my story when I was a kid was very much like yours. Like I remember one time I broke my fucking toe. My mother made me walk home, like a long walk home, told me I was being dramatic. Just, you're always like this. And I kept saying, I can't put pressure on my foot. Something's wrong. She's like, walk home. You're fine. Because in her mind, she thought, oh God, if I have to take her to the doctor, I can't afford it.
Yeah,
You
that's
know, we
true.
didn't most of the time have insurance. We couldn't go to the doctor. I never went to the dentist as a kid, ever. That was what rich people did. Po ass people, like you didn't go to the dentist unless your teeth were falling out of your head. God. But as I've gotten older, you know, like I've had to go back and like re-examine things because in, you know, as a kid, I thought a good mother would take her kid to the doctor. A good mother would do these things. And when I look back, I'm like, well, my mother was a good mother. My mother was always worried about putting food on the table. That was the press, like a broke toe meant nothing. The next day she did have to take me though, because my whole right foot lit up blue and black. And I was like, something's wrong with my foot. She was like, maybe we should go to that doctor. So
Yeah,
we
and
made
that's
a
possible
list.
too, because my mom did work like two and three jobs, and then my dad had money, my mom did not. And so when they got divorced, I lived with my mom. And what I think I've pieced together is after this wrist thing happened, I went and lived with my dad. So I think there was also like resentment just financially on her side too. She
Well,
also has a,
I'm
yeah.
not trying to make excuses for your mother at
No, I
all.
know.
Really
It's
not.
just, yeah. I mean, that makes it helps my story of like she's like it wasn't necessarily like she didn't care, she didn't take care, but like she was working and you know she could have been afraid of financial things and you know like talking to my dad like just there it, were other circumstances.
But one of the things that I think is more important, though, is to take your list of rules you have for her now.
Yeah.
What are like your current, I'm an adult? Like, I've gone back and looked at my childhood a lot because one of the things that I did was when I kind of started looking, I really wanted to have a good relationship with my mother. I didn't want the bad one that we had. And I knew that I was going to have to fix it. I was the one who was into self-development. I was the one who was growing emotionally, mentally, like, and all the things. My mother wasn't. And I could just keep being pissed, or I was like, if this relationship's important to me, I got to fix the areas I'm in control of. And I did a lot of that. And part of my work was going back through childhood and taking an adult lens look at my childhood and not just remembering it from, you know, an 8-year-old's brain, a 12-year-old's brain. Like all the thoughts and feelings I was having back then, you know, they just weren't they weren't as enlightened. And we're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
We're supposed to make a, you know, sense of the things that we make sense of as children. And I went through some stuff, and even like that crazy ass stepmother of mine. You know, I could still be pissed to this day that my father would leave me with someone that he also didn't feel safe around. You know, like when I come to find out, she was chasing him around with a butcher knife sometimes. Like we went to one of their houses, and I remember thinking there was like weird marks in the door. It's where she was taking a knife and trying to, like, you know, go all Jack Nicholson to get into a room that he had locked himself in. I was just like, what? So when I went back and kind of relooked at everything, I really tried to make peace of like my dad, I don't think he matured anymore after the age of 16. I really think there's something going on in him where he's always had a childlike view of the world and an emotion, like he kind of is emotionally blunted. That's just who my dad is. And it kind of helped me with a lot. But the main work was making a list of all those things that I thought my mom should and shouldn't be, my dad should and shouldn't be now. I do the same thing with Chris. And then I really look at all of them and I'm like, is that just the way I want it? Or is this something that I'm like, I'm willing, knowing who I'm married to, knowing who my mother is, these rules mean so much to me that I'm willing to stake my emotions and the relationship on it? Or is some of this stuff that I just think should happen, and when I really look at it, I don't want to be in pain because I know this person and they're never, ever going to do these things. So, like with Chris, who I love more than anybody in the whole world, in my mind, I think Chris should want to spend more time with me. And that's what like my natural desire is, because I am a person who want, I'm very social. My husband is not. He's actually pretty antisocial. We often joke that if I die, he's got three friends in the entire, or four friends in the entire world. My best friend, my other best friend, and their husbands. And those husbands won't be in his life unless I'm in his life. And Chris has often said, you know, if you die, I'm just going to be alone the rest of my life and I'll be happy because I'll have Logan and I don't need anything else. And I'm like, so I really looked at my rule of he should want to spend more time with me. And I thought, maybe not. Maybe this has nothing to do with his love of me. Maybe it's, I would like to spend more time with him because that's what I like. He should want to have alone time because that's what he likes. And that doesn't mean that my marriage is on the rocks. It doesn't mean that he doesn't love me enough. It doesn't, like all the things that I make it mean, that's not true when I really look at it. Now, when he doesn't want to spend time with me and I get hurt, I use the hurt as a way to remind myself, like, Corinne, you're often hurt about things that aren't real. What is the truth here? He really does love me. And that always reminds me, too, in that moment, I know how to take care of me. I don't need someone else to do that because I can do it. In the moments when I just want to be with her, in the moments when I'm hurt, I know how to be there for myself, talk myself off the ledge. I know how to turn those automatic negative emotions into something that grows me and my relationship with me rather than trying to control him and make him do shit he doesn't want to do. And then sometimes, if I really am missing him, I'm just like, I go in and I don't go in guns a blazing or acting the ass or having demands or setting immense boundaries. I just go in and say, I'm really missing you these days. And can we spend some time together? I know you like your alone time, but I'm having a hard time with it. And that's just me being honest. And he almost always says, well, yeah, all right, what do you want to do? I have to decide it. I have to plan it. I have to do all it. But that's being married to him. So you, just for you, I would love for you to make a list of, like, number one, do you want to have a rule that says my mother should ask about my health, should care about my health? Do you even want that rule for Melissa? Because she's saying that is not important to me and it never will be. It's not in my DNA or my wheelhouse. And we don't know why. It could be, I never had the, I was so broke, I didn't have the luxury to care. So why would I care as a grown ass woman knowing that you know, can take care of yourself? You know, who
Yeah,
knows? You
that's
know?
only like hurting me. And then also, I thought too, and this is just like, she might have like felt a little hurt I didn't tell her. I don't know. You know, my sister telling her. So, like, I could probably change that to not be hurt if she doesn't ask. But also, I'm sure she'd like to know if I was getting very sick. Maybe. I don't know. You know, like, I'd have to
Well,
figure
she
all
might
of that.
like to know, but she's not the kind of person
Oh.
who sends flowers, cards, calls, asks, inquires, shows up. Like, you know, it's just like my dad sounds a lot like your mother. Like,
If something's wrong in my life and he knew, he probably cares, but I would never notice it because the way he cares is internally, not external. Like, I think he probably thinks about it. Like, every now and then, he'll just rando call me. I haven't heard from him in, I don't think he's even tried to call me in over a year now. And I think he's texted me twice in the last probably year. But like every now and then I'll get a Facebook message that will say, Keith Wright, y'all please don't look up my daddy. He is a redneck from hell and I am completely ashamed of about every belief he has. And God, he loves to kill. Nothing, I don't have a problem with hunting, but do not look up my daddy and think that is as any reflection on Corinne. Because every now and then he'll post something on his timeline and tag me, and I'm like, oh, Jesus. Why? Why, baby Jesus, are we having to do this today? But it'll be like, thinking of my daughter today. And I'm like, why? Why today of all days? And it will say nothing, but it'll be like a random something once every, 3 years. So I usually take, like, even though she wants you to come fix her TV or like my dad would be real quick to call me if he needed something. He'd probably call and say, hey, I need this thing or whatever. And never ask about me or my child. But I use those as just signals of like, I'm probably on his mind more than I know. And he's just never going to be the one that, like, he's just never going to, he's never going to be the dad I would want him to be. And I, sometimes I mourn for that part, but most of the time I just tell myself, like, it's okay to want it, but don't be mad when it's not happening. Like, he didn't text me on my birthday this year. I gave up being pissed about that shit years ago. It used to really bother me, especially when I became more successful. It was like there was a part of me that really wanted to rub it in his face. And I would like tell him things that were going really well in my life. Like, I remember the first time I told him, like, the first time this business really started taking off, I remember telling him. And he said, I just don't even understand all that, as long as it's not illegal. I thought, because I look like the kind of person that's doing illegal shit. So what do you think? What do you want to do for you when it comes to your mother?
Yeah, I like to. I honestly thought that my expectations were gone, but apparently they're not. So I will look at that list and, review and then think. 'Cause yeah, I didn't like how pissed, and I was pissed for hours, and I was like, well, this isn't helping healing. That's not good for my body. So yeah, I'll make that list for sure. That's helpful. And then, like, how I respond to, yeah, because she's never going to be the person that responds. And then maybe, if something does come up, I do let her know, but make sure that I know that she's not going to respond. And then I see now that the not telling her was just like a way to like prevent disappointment, like.
I want to just tell you again, I co-sign. Sometimes that's very healthy. We just want to make sure that we're doing it very consciously. Like, if, like, there are certain times I don't do, it's no different than weighing. Sometimes I tell people, don't wait for a while. If it's going to be a distraction and it's going to be such a trigger, and you're not going to be able to like thought work yourself out of it or talk yourself off ledges and stuff, set it aside for now and let's focus on what is very much within our control. Like our habits, let's focus on those things. Let's track things that don't freak you out. And then we can, like, when we get our emotional bandwidth under us, we can move over there. It's no different than what you're doing. It's like, you know what? For a while, if I was hanging on to expectations of how she should act, or if I knew that if my mom didn't act a certain way, I'd be disappointed, I would be hurt, I would be angry, I'd be all these things. Taking that out of the picture,
is a really good way to give yourself some time to focus on you and to figure things out. But now you can decide, how much do I want to include her? And you might have times like where the health concerns are very minimal, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to tell her. And if she doesn't give a shit, which she probably won't, it's not going to bother me. And you might have other times where it's like, I don't need to deal with that part of me that's going to want more from her right now. So I'm not going to tell her. I'm not like, I'm in, like, all of it is about making very conscious decisions about what you want to do and really like your reason why.
Yeah, part of it is like I help my mother to help my sister. So that's another piece too. I have to see like how much I want to sacrifice. And I am in counseling about, we're going to start talking about this stuff. You know, how much. And but my sister realized today, she just texted me a little bit ago. She's like, she triggers you. Let's get her off your cable because I pay for her cable. You know what I mean? Like, she's like, she triggers you. So like, I was like, Chris and I are going to pull away more. So like, but my sister, and that's my sister. My sister's like, she knows because I'm like, I would have nothing to do with her. I only help her because of you. And so, you know, that's a whole nother piece. But that's my sister, and she knows that she's putting herself out there. So, but it's good to also have a conversation with my sister about it because we do have the same experience. So,
What
yeah.
does your mother think of, what does your sister think of your mother? What
Same
makes
thing.
it, what makes her be like more involved in her life, I guess, or talking to her?
Her dad died as well, different dads. She's my half sister. So her dad was the same way. And then she just says, well, it's our parents. No one else is there to help her. She's got that piece in her. And I'm like, oh, I've tried so hard. Like, I can't anymore. But her children, they're like 30 and 28. Like, she never asks about the kids. And the kids don't talk to her, like, because they, why would they? You know? So that's my sister. That's my sister being like, she has this like duty feeling that she needs to be there for our mom, but she's okay where I am. My sister doesn't pressure me. Even today, my sister's like, I don't know why she asks you to fix the TV. I think she thinks you're smarter than me. You know, so my sister's obviously got stuff in there too. So,
Or your mom keeps asking you because she doesn't want to lose connection with you.
yeah, I thought of that too. Like, 'cause I didn't let her know. Yeah, I thought of that this morning too. I can see her trying to reset the Disney password 'cause I keep getting emails. Like that 6-digit code. And I was like, yeah. So I sort of expecting her to email me this morning.
Well, one thing that I just want you to see is it is okay if you want to separate from your mom, and it's okay even if it's for duty that your sister wants to stay connected to your mom, because the last thing your sister probably would want to feel if her expectations for herself is a good daughter takes care of her parents no matter what. Your sister would much rather be able to honor her own rule about herself to feel an integrity with herself than to, like, I will take the triggering. I will be pissed. I will go through the gauntlet of these things because this right here, though, like, it's a value of mine. That doesn't mean it's a value we all have to share, but it just gives everybody a really good sense of there's probably 50% of the women in No BS that feel like, good daughters take care of their parents, and 50% feel like parents should take care of themselves. Good daughters don't have to do that. It doesn't mean that that is the nice thing about your own values. When we talk about shoulds and shouldn'ts and all that kind of stuff, you get to set your own. But what most of us do is we don't set them purposely, we don't think them through. Am I operating off of values that I still want? Or am I operating off of values that I've heard on television or society, like some of society says? Or I'm operating off of values that I learned from my parents growing up. Just like one of my mother's values was you went to work and it did not matter how fucking bad you felt. I can't tell you how many times in my working life, I have drug my sorry ass to work when I really needed to take care of myself. Because for my mother, it became a value. Like, we work hard, we don't call out sick, we are dependable. Because if we aren't that way, we lose our job, we can't feed our children, we're out on the street. Well, now that I'm enlightened and stuff, and I've done a lot of work, I'm like, that has been one of my but I have operated off of that, watching my mother all my life. And my father was the same way. Of all the things, they both were cut from the same. You work until you're bleeding out your eyes. Unless you're in the emergency room getting cut under the knife, you're at work. And I've had to do a lot of work on that, because there has been days where I have legit been so tired, so exhausted, never taking time off. I mean, I never take days off, ever, ever, in no BS. Chris and I laugh all the time. Like, it's been years since we took one full day off where we did not work at all on the same day. Even when we go to Vegas, we work 5 hours before we're allowed to go to the pool. We get up at 5 a.m., we work till 10 a.m., and we sit in a courtyard and we're working. And that's how we've always been. And I've really started it, like, my health started like suffering. Like, I was just like dragging my ass all the time. And then plus feeling lazy, feeling guilty, feeling selfish. If I'm taking time for myself, I had to work through my values. And I didn't even realize I had just adopted a value from my mother without my own consent. And I decided at 50 years old that I was going to rethink my core values. Where did they come from? Does it make sense? It doesn't make sense for me to never miss a day of work anymore. In fact, it's better for me with the work that I do, running three businesses. It's better if every now and then I take some time off and recharge. Otherwise, I can't think clearly. So think about just some of your even things like that. Like, when you compare and contrast your sister, you know, her core value is somewhere is we take care of mom, even at our own expense. And your core value is not that. I don't do that at my own expense. And
Yeah,
that's
like
fine.
I'm okay with like paying her cable. I mean, she's like now my sister, her financial situation changed a little for the better. So like I'm okay. I'm kind of like okay with a distance. Like I don't want anything bad to happen to her. I'm just like, it's all right, I'll send something. I'll send medical supplies. You know what I mean? Like I'm just like,
Well,
all right.
that's, but this is where you get to say, like, you know, this is how I take care of my mother. It's just like, I say this all the time when it comes to Logan. In traditional sense, a lot of you out there would think I'm a terrible mother. I don't love playing with my child. I never did. I don't love spending time with him and stuff. Now, my husband goes walking and running with him every single day. Like, Chris has always been the one that does all the talking and the connecting. He's been the nurturer. I am the doer. I will make sure that baby's clothed and fed. I was cleaning up the vomit last week when he got sick. I will get him to doctors. I financially take care of things. Like, I make sure the tactical's done. But when it comes to ushy gushy and lovely shit, I don't love it. Never have. And like, that is what I like had to work through, because for a long time I felt bad that I wasn't like Chris, or I wasn't like other mothers, or I'm not like my sister. As if like the way that your sister does her daughterly duty could be better or whatever. And if yours is like, well, mine's removed and mine is this, like, no, this is where you contribute to the relationship. This is what feels good. This is what feels safe. This is what works. And if you just start giving yourself a lot of credit for that and just say, like, and rather than telling your sister, you're like, I only pay the cable bill because it triggers me. It's like, no, that's how I know I'm taking care of mom, because I'm never going to be the one that takes care of her, like sitting by her bedside and like, can we have conversations and stuff? It's like, probably not going to be you.
No. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, definitely give myself credit for that and then look at the values too. For sure.
Okay. I think you got plenty to work on.
Yes. Thank you.
That's the nice thing about moms. Man, if you will do mother work, you will grow as a human. They give us plenty to grow ourselves. All right. Thank
All
you,
right, thank
Melissa.
you.
All righty. Let me get my mouse turned back on. This thing loves to die. All right. Vicky. Let's see. Vicki, are you coming? Yeah, Karen. So Karen says, Corinne, you may not be gushy, but your actions show your love. I can look at your parenting style and see you demonstrate other feelings other than a hug. Very much so. But that is like for Karen, for all of you. This is what's important. Let me bring it up. Well, nobody's got their hand raised, so we'll end on this. Vicki didn't want to come up. This is why it's so tricky in the human brain. Because if I'm looking out at the landscape, like on social television and things like that, we are modeled usually certain ways that love is supposed to look, mothering should look, parenting should look, these things should look. And if that is your definition, without you thinking about what you want your definition to be, you can easily live a life of being mad and disappointed in others or mad and disappointed in yourself. So often we are hanging on to the way things should look and make ourselves miserable. So a lot of the work that I've done with my own personal coach over the last 6 years, I've been working on this for 6 years, is defining what good motherhood looks like for me and really looking at the things that I do and then the things that I like judge myself on. I've had to really write about them and ask myself, is this as bad as I think? Where did, like, if I think I should be doing this, where did I learn it? Like, who modeled it? Where did I first get this idea that this is the way it should be? Or where in my current world am I thinking that's the way it should be? So often we just start looking at, like, I picked it up here. And when we think about it, it's like, I don't want that anymore. Or I can see that there's more definitions than what the limited one that I've given myself. Again, when it comes to relationships, though, it is just so full of gray. It is not black and white. I would love to be able to write a book that would just say, like, here's the way it should always be. And that is not the case. Because every person has their own experiences, their own wants and desires and stuff. I just think that in order for us to feel good, we should question, like, why do I want, like, very often we will want our parents to say certain things to us because we're not saying that to us. And we think because they don't think it, maybe, like, if my parents don't tell me how great I am or what a good person I am, then I must not be a good person. I must not be great. And that's why we want to look at this stuff, because very often, more common than you think, you want people to show you love, acceptance, give you your flowers, recognize you, appreciate you, and you're wanting someone who is not equipped to do it, to do it. You're handing them a job they're not qualified for. Like, if I want to feel proud about the woman I've become from my past, knowing how I grew up, the last fucking person on the earth that I should be wanting to acknowledge me is my father. He is not equipped. He's not even going to tell somebody that they did a good job at McDonald's if they pack his French fries correctly, much less me. It doesn't get on his radar to do that. He's also never been one to ever be told that, so he doesn't even understand why somebody else would want that. No one ever told him he did a good job. And if they did it, like I remember my dad one time, he never paid child support. He got offered a promotion at the factory that he worked at to manage. And they told him it was because he was so good at what he did, they wanted him to run the section. He turned it down. He was like, I would never want to be involved in that. He took, you do a good job and everything, as like a, don't tell me those things. That just means more responsibility. And I don't like responsibility. So, somebody like that, why would I ever think for a hot second that they would be proud of me? Because to him, being proud of someone would probably mean, well, they're just going to get more responsibility, and that sucks. That's why we look at these things. Because otherwise, we cry our eyes out. We spend our adult life wanting other people to love us to make up for the love we're not giving ourselves. And I'm like, don't do that. Spend your time figuring out how to love yourself in the ways that you didn't get that love. Bypass the long route. Let's take a shortcut. The easiest way to feel love is to do it yourself. The hardest way is to get other people to co-sign and behave the way you need them to, just so you can feel okay. All right, we got one person who raised their hand. Jean, let's go. Let's make sure you want to do it. All right, Jean, you just made the most interesting comment.
Here I am.
Hey,
Yes.
all
Hey.
right, what do you want coaching on?
I am stuck.
Okay.
I have been in maintenance for 3 years. I lost 65 pounds and have kept it off,
Good.
but I have 10 pounds to go, and I am just frustrated because I've tried, and I'm just not getting that to get to the last, the end of the end of the journey to be at goal.
Okay. So let me ask you a couple of just clarifying questions.
Sure.
Do you know how many, like in the last 30 days, how many overeats you've had?
Way too many.
Okay, so we're not stuck at all.
True, but why am I
We're still
overeating?
overeating. Like there's, let me just say this. When our weight is actually stuck and we're not overeating, there are things we can do to start changing things. Like then we have to really start looking at like maybe I've got to recalibrate my enough, you know, there's maybe I need to change up some of my foods, whatever. 99% of the time, I've got genes in front of me. Calling it stuck on this, like I can't lose the last 10 pounds when the more accurate description is when I stop the overeats, the 10 pounds will come off. I'm maintaining a level of emotional overeating. Are
Yes.
you frozen? Oh, okay, never mind. I thought you were frozen for a second. So, if you say I've got way too many overeats, what have you done? Like, what is the most prevalent? Let's start with this one. What is the most, like, you were like, Corinne, if I would quit overeating this way, I know that I would start losing weight. So, what is like the big whammy one?
That's hard to just to narrow it down, actually.
All right, well, give me a list of your overeats and I'll bet you I can figure it out.
Well, at night with the hubby, I feel like if I leave stuff behind, especially if we go out to eat, my husband will like eat the stuff off my plate, or he'll watch me like, oh my gosh, are you going to really eat that? and I feel like I should eat it, because if I don't, then it's that's a big one.
Wait a minute. Wait, I just want to make sure I'm super clear. If you don't finish your plate, your husband finishes it for you.
Yes.
Why is that a problem?
Because he's way overweight.
Okay. So you'd rather be overweight than make him overweight.
Unfortunately, yeah.
I just
No,
want to,
I
did
want to
you
be,
ever
no,
think
I
of,
can't. Let me th wait. I don't want to be overweight. You're
but
right.
yeah, you do. When you are like, well, if he eats my extras, he's going to gain weight. You're like, so I'll eat the extras. Look, the extras are going to cause weight gain, whether you eat them
Yes.
or he eats them. Now we just got it. Like I don't want you, like you've, this is what we call, I've created a noble excuse. Oh, I love him and he's way overweight. And if I don't eat the, all, if I don't overeat, then he'll be overeating. You will never, ever leave that food behind if you are tying it to harming him. Why would you ever do, like, that would be like saying, like, I just want you to see how your brain has worked this out.
Crazy.
Now, it's not crazy. It's good to know that in your
Yeah.
mind, you're like, oh, okay, I should be the one that's overweight. Instead of, I'm going to leave food behind and I need to work with my husband on not finishing my food. Or I need to just, like, let me ask you this about your husband. Let's say you don't finish your food. Is he going to overeat anyway?
Yes.
And then the last 3 years that you've been finishing your plate so that he didn't eat it, how much weight has he lost because of that exercise you're doing?
He's gained.
So you're not help, you're that you finishing your plate hasn't made anybody lose weight. In fact, everybody gains. You don't lose the last 10. He keeps gaining weight. So it, one thing that you can just remind yourself when you want to finish your plate is nobody's losing weight because I finished this. He's not losing weight and I'm not losing weight. So somebody ought to be losing weight in this scenario. And it, why not me? Because
True.
I have to guess, if you want your husband to lose weight, you're going to have to go about it differently than you overeating to get him there. I want you to really think about this. How is he ever going to lose weight because you overeat?
He's not.
Exactly. It's just like when people say, I clean my plate because I feel so guilty that there are, you know, starving children all over the world. It's like, every time you overate, how many kids sat back and went, I feel better. Some lady in the States just overate. I'm glad I sucked some air down. No one. No one benefits from your overeating.
Right.
Okay. So that's one thing we can correct to loosen up some of this overeating. What's the next big offender?
I'm lazy.
How are you lazy? I can't wait to hear this.
Because I don't want to get up to take it to the trash can.
You don't have to. Well, let me ask you this. I don't know that that's true. When you finish dinner, you just leave your plates on the kitchen table and then 3 months later, rats and roaches are crawling all over your house because you're so lazy you won't clean off the table?
No.
So it's not lazy. Because there's at some point you clear the table, right?
Correct.
Okay. So it's not laziness. What is it?
It's an emotional need, but I can't tell you what emotion it is.
Okay.
Like, I think
So
that the food's going to make me feel better, or it's going to, and it doesn't. So I'm not real sure.
well, it's making you feel better because if you don't eat it, what do you, let's say that you have to, let's say you and the husbands are eating and you are sitting there at home and you realize, like, oh shit, man, I am at enough. There is some food left on this plate. All right. Now, you're just going to sit there. Say 10 minutes. Say your husband's still eating and you're just gonna sit there. Now, how do you feel?
He's gone. He eats 3 minutes and done.
Oh, so when you finish it enough, you don't even have to worry about him finishing your food because he leaves.
Majority of the time, or if there's something he really wants, he'll stare at me like, "Are you done with that? Are you done with that?" And then I guess my little rebellion says, "This is mine, dang it, stay away."
Oh, so you do know why you're overeating.
Yeah. When you put it that way, yes, I do.
I didn't put it anyway, you did.
Yes, ma'am.
So, why do you feel threatened? If you've had enough, or if you're eating and you're not at enough yet, and your husband is saying, "Are you done yet? Are you done yet? You gonna finish that? You gonna finish that?" Why do you feel threatened? Like, well, this is mine.
Probably past drama when we didn't have enough, but we have enough now.
Yeah, well, the path, like, that doesn't mean that your brain is caught up to it. But what
True.
else? Like, I really want you to think about if you're sitting there and your husband wants to eat whatever it is you have, and you're still eating, and he's like, "Are you done yet? Can I want that." Why do you feel threatened? What are you afraid that's going to happen?
He's going to take it away.
And that would be bad. Well, first of all, how often has he taken your food away before you were done?
It's especially when we go out to eat, and this week we've gone out to eat a whole lot because it's been
Okay.
so hot, nobody wants to cook.
Okay, that's fair. And then of all the times you went out to eat this week, how many times did he take your food away before you were done and ate it?
Five, three out of the five.
3 out of 5. All right. Let's go back to the most recent one where he did that. Okay. Tell me how it went down. And you really got to describe it to me so I can kind of see the situation and figure out like what we can do about it. Okay. So,
We actually, hold on a second. My vacuum cleaner is coming in here.
okay.
Sorry, I thought it was going to the dock. The dock.
No, that's okay. All right.
We
So,
it's hot,
where were
so we
you?
decided to order out a burger from the local place and pick it up.
Okay.
We ordered one burger, we split it, and then we ordered French fries, sweet potato fries, and onion rings, because that way we could split all of it together.
Okay. All right. And then, so y'all are, and you brought it back home.
We brought it back home,
Okay.
and then
And
we
y'all
fixed.
share, I guess you split your food out. Okay. And so you're eating your share
Correct.
and you're not done yet, right? You're
Correct.
still like not even at enough yet.
I'm probably right at enough. So I could have stopped.
Wait a minute.
Should have stopped.
This is very different. You didn't answer my question accurately.
I'm sorry.
My question was, how often, when you've not had enough, You're not actually finished. Like, you're eating, and your husband's like, you need to give that to me now. I'm finishing that. I'm going to eat that, even though you're not done yet. I don't mean mentally done. I mean, Gene is not at enough, has not had enough food to, qualify to check her box off because she stopped at enough yet. How many times has he pre-taken your food away before you could reach your physical enoughness in this last week?
Probably zero.
That's what I was asking because you described, I just want you to notice what your brain did. You described it as 3 out of 5 meals this week. I was eating. I'd not reached my enough level yet, and my husband took my food away.
Wrong.
Okay.
I was
So
off,
tell
wrong.
me what did happen.
I was at enough, and then he took it away.
Okay. And that's a problem because you're finished. You've had what you needed. And then when he took the rest of it, that's a problem because
It's mine.
okay. The question is, do you want to share it or not? If it's yours,
Yes, I want to share it, but not with you because I don't want you to still have your weight problem. But then that doesn't make sense because, yeah. Jeez, my brain is shitty.
no, not that your brain is shitty. It's what our brains do is
Let's think.
your biggest fear right now is that he's too overweight. And you're trying to control him in any way that you possibly can, thinking if I can just do this, that will make him do this. And we just want to pull it apart because what's on, the only thing that's actually happening is I'm overeating. I'm not able to lose my last 10 pounds. I keep reteaching myself to overeat as if it's okay. And he's not learning anything through it. In fact, he's only gained weight since I started doing this. It's not helping at all. If he really is still hungry or just wants to keep eating, if I had to guess whether or not he finishes your plate or not, he's going to go get more food.
Yes.
That's usually because if he's an emotional eater at all, even though men emotionally eat all the time. They're just not nearly as in tune with why they do it as we are. A lot of times, men do a lot of emotional eating from boredom, especially at night. They tend to eat a lot at night because they also were kind of like us. They're kind of used to doing. And men, they have their own socialized constructs. And one of their socialized constructs is that a man should, be doing and providing and doing blah, 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 blah. And if they have anything in the miss there, they may be eating at night because they also don't want to work, but they'd rather eat than to be thinking about, whatever it is a man thinks about. So if he's emotionally eating at all, whether or not it comes off your plate or not, he's going to feel those emotions.
Okay. Yeah, like I got that.
Okay. The only thing I want you to see is that if you want him to lose weight, he's got to want to do it himself. You taking a few scraps off your plate and eating them yourself harms you and doesn't help him figure out that he wants to lose weight. Period. Like, we can just cut, this is one behavior that you can cut out. And you've got to know that when you sit there with it, with the food, you're not lazy because you're not throwing it away. You are going to feel weird because deep down you think leaving it on your plate somehow means you're contributing to something you're worried about. I'm worried about his weight. And if I'm not eating it, I'm contributing to it. When the truth is, when I'm not eating my food, it doesn't, it's actually not affecting his weight at all. That will fix that one, overeat. This idea of it being mine, it is yours. If you don't want him to eat it, throw it away. If you're done, get rid of it. But you have to tell yourself, I'm not hurting him or me when I do that. Because I think the only reason why you haven't thrown it away has nothing to do with being lazy. It has everything to do with in your mind that somehow, like, there's something going on with him. What do you think?
My husband's 63. In April, he lost his job unexpectedly. So, trying to find a new job. We still have a teenager at home. So, emotions have been crazy, but that's just for the last few months. So, that makes a whole lot of sense why I didn't realize I was even doing that. Kind of awakening.
What's coming up for you?
I'm an emotional eater. And right now, this is a very difficult situation, and that's how I'm dealing with it.
Why does that make you sad? Or why does it make you want to cry?
I always feel like I'm 75% done. I never make it to the end. And it's been really bothering that I just can't get to my goal. It's like I'm so dang close and I just can't get there. And I now that I think about it, yeah, I have been overeating way too much.
How does it feel to just admit, I now know why? Because before it's like, I just can't get there. I just can't get there, as if you're like, it's confusing or something like, I must not be trying hard enough or whatever. And now what we understand is like, it makes sense why I'm not getting there. It's a hard time in my life and I've been eating through it. It makes sense why I can't get this last 10 off.
It now gives me hope that we can get there. And to really pay attention to the overeats.
Yes. I promise you that when we get really honest about what's going on, now we have solutions. Because when you get honest about what's going on, you're identifying the problems. Like, one problem we identified is, I'm scared for my husband. He's really overweight and he's lost his job and all these other things. So it would make sense why, when I'm eating, there's a part of me that wants to just keep eating. I'm like, one thing is I've tied it to like his health, his wellness. If I just eat it, I'm only 10 pounds overweight. If he eats it, it's just like all of a sudden it's so much bigger and batter. And then when we really looked at it, you're like, damn, he's gained weight. Like, I've been hoovering my plate every night. Doesn't seem to be affecting him at all. Not in the way that I thought it would. So I was just wrong about that. And now I can just like, I'm going to be done. It is my food. And you get to, you could have a conversation with him and just say, I prefer you not to clean my plate. And you can
What
tell
a
him,
great idea.
I know, you could just say, like you could give him a multitude of reasons. You could say, I prefer you not to clean my plate because I'm trying to get, like, I really want to lose my last 10 pounds. And it's important for me to actually see how much food I'm not eating. It's important for me to sit with it and not feel like it's unfair. Like, I'm trying to get really comfortable with the idea of, this is how much I eat. This is what my body needs. Like, you could just explain it to him that way. And he'll, one, he might be like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. Because if he's like most husbands like to fix things for you. And if you say, what would really help me fix my enoughness and stuff is you not cleaning my plate. You not asking, am I done? That would really help me. A lot of men really respond to that well because men are inherently trying to, how men always want to fix things for us. And we're just like, sometimes you just want to be listened to. You don't want to be fixed. The other thing that could happen is he starts thinking, huh, well, maybe I should do some of that. And if all you ever do is clean your plate, he just thinks that cleaning your plate is what we're supposed to do. He never even questions cleaning his own plate. So you're modeling a different behavior. And then if he says, no, I think it's wasteful. I think it's blah, 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 blah. At least you'll know why he's wanting to keep eating. And then you could even just say, why do you think it's so wasteful? What if I want to eat it? What if I want to eat those leftovers tomorrow? Or if they're still in there tomorrow and you really want them, you can have them. Unless we have conversations, though, we just kind of keep going through these. Our brain is always going to make up stories, always to explain behaviors, explain why we're doing things and stuff. And it's not really good at coming up with the stories that work for us. It just latches on to a story, whether it works for us or not. And then it hangs on to it tooth and nail until we coach, until we ask questions, until Corinne says, like, what about this? And you're like, what? Our brain, why would your brain think about it differently? It doesn't need to unless it's questioned. That's why I always tell y'all, if you will look at your overeats, that's where you get to question the things. Otherwise, your brain's just telling you one story and you're believing it because that's the way we're supposed to do it. And then when we question it, we get to decide, is that the one I want? Is that the most helpful? Does that even really make sense when I actually look at it? It's like in our case, we figured out it doesn't make sense. Me cleaning my plate makes me stay overweight. And it's not helped him lose any weight. In fact, I've just noticed that he's gained weight. So this particular thing I'm doing, it's not doing what I thought it was doing.
Correct.
Any other emotional eats you got going on I need to know about? Or is that the main one?
That's the main one. I really
Usually,
guess I didn't realize that it was bothering me so much, and that's why I was doing it.
yeah. I mean, I think you got multiple layers there, but it's like, also sometimes when we have a thought like, this is mine. It could be looking at your life and figuring out, do you have a lot of things that you think are yours? Sometimes like food is the only thing that we really have that we feel like we have, like it's our one thing that we enjoy, our one pleasurable thing. It's our one thing, and we don't want somebody to take that away from us or even take some of it away. Very often, and I'm not saying that this is your case, but sometimes when we have such a visceral reaction to this is my food, it's because the rest of our life we spend doing for everybody else, taking care of everybody else. We don't give ourselves very many things. Like we're can be overprotective with food if you tend to be a mom who, takes care of their kids first, buys their kids shit first. Like you kind of like slowly go down the list. And if food is the only way that you feel like you have something that's yours, you would be very protective over it. You would not want somebody else to have it. Because it's not that they're taking away your food, they're taking away the one thing you allow yourself to have that's like your pleasure, your break, your peace, your joy. And if food is the only way you truly, really get that in life, and you're too busy with a bunch of other shit, with worry, anxiety, jobs, taking care of people, blah, 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 now we know why we become overly protective of it. Okay. All right, Jean, you work on that. Come back in about 8 weeks and let's see if that weight hasn't shifted a little bit. right.
All right.
All right.
Thank
Thank you.
you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right.
All right. That is it for today, y'all. Now, I don't know how many people are still left, but if you are here, and you were a guest today where you've not joined an OBS yet. You're still thinking about it. You have till tomorrow. Get off the fucking fence. Get in. It's pretty great around here. We get to the root of things. It is definitely better in here than it is just listening to the podcast. Just listening to the podcast doesn't really change you. Most people who just listen to the podcast, you get some help and stuff, but you can't go deep. You can't reach out for help. You don't get my assistance. You don't get access to these kinds of calls. So think about joining us because when we close the doors, we're going to be rocking and rolling in here. All these ladies will tell you we do a lot of good stuff in here, and it's nothing I gave anybody today for homework is that fucking hard. All right. Y'all have a good one. Talk to y'all later. Bye, y'all.